presidential rivals, even though those boys have been getting tough on her lately. Clinton's comment comes amid debate as to whether the Hillary Rodham Clinton campaign's complaints about her rivals piling on suggest the criticism is directed at the lone woman in the presidential race or the Democratic frontrunner. Last week, Bill Clinton, in defense of his wife against political critics, cited the Swift Boat television ads of the 2004 presidential campaign that questioned John Kerry's patriotism, and the campaign commercials in the 2002 that suggested Senator Max Cleland of Georgia was soft on terrorism. Excuse me, several Democratic candidates said they were surprised by the analogy. It's a great time to be a Democrat, Bill Clinton told more than 800 students and supporters at the Trumbull College. Even though those boys have been getting tough on her lately, she can handle it. Clinton said he loves campaigning for his wife and paying back for all those years she campaigned for him for governor of Arkansas and president. She says, I have to work hard because free campaign help is hard to come by, Clinton quipped. Clinton said that his wife's positions on education, health care, the economy, and international affairs make her the best qualified candidate to be president. The United States needs to get out of Iraq, but we have to do it in a way that doesn't leave it worse than it is now, he said. Hillary was the first to ask the Pentagon for a planned tour or orderly withdrawal. The nation must restore its standing in the world. This is something Clinton has been said has been damaged during the Bush administration and blah, 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 blah. Great, they're climbing on her, and she just doesn't know what to do. Her flip-flopping back and forth, the way she went up and down on the issue of driver's licenses for illegals in New York State, her many other fleeting get-arounds, plus the now that she's been caught planting pieces she wants to hear, and listening to her answers is just unbelievable. It's crazy. Has anyone gone out there and actually taken a look at any of Hillary Clinton's websites or any of her plans out there? She's got it all. Oh, I'll tell you what, this girl, she's got it all wrapped up here, telling everybody exactly what they want to hear. It's whatsoever on how she plans to do any of this. But she's got it, baby. She's going to provide affordable and accessible health care. And that one I thought was really a good one there, you know. She's going to make it available. The insurance companies will not be able to deny you coverage if you have a pre-existing condition. Uh-huh. It's reliable. It'll be portable. If you change or lose your job, you keep your health care. And affordable. Here's my favorite one. Unlike the current health care system where insurance premiums send people into bankruptcy, the plan that she has provides tax credits for working families to help them cover their costs. The tax credits will ensure that working families never have to pay more than a limited percentage of their income for health care. Yeah, read that. Forcing insurance companies to do something? Right. I will watch it. Take note of what happened here in Massachusetts when the state of Massachusetts tried to tell the auto insurance companies how they were going to do business here. Remember what the auto insurance company said to Massachusetts? See you later. Bye. Ain't going to happen, Hillary. But, I mean, she's got it all, boy. She's got energy independence and global warming, all kinds of neat stuff she has down there. No way she's going to figure out how to pay for any of it. No way how she's figuring out how she's actually even going to do it. Supporting parents, she's going to make affordable, quality daycare for everybody. Uh-huh. Yep, and how do you exactly plan to do that? Well, there's no reason to give out any of our, the sources behind these ideas are. No way that there's an actual plan, just that this is what she plans to do, and it's going to be a wonderful world when she's in charge. Now, God bless her. I'll tell you what, she ain't going anywhere, nowhere, no how, not at all. I'm sorry, folks, but you know, the more I look at this whole campaign, the more I can see any Republican candidate just being a shoo-in. I hate to say it, but she's going down tougher. She's going to go down worse than Dukakis. You know, I hate to say this to all the Democrats out there. So I do want to reinforce you Republicans, please don't worry about a thing. This woman is going to go down just as bad as George McGovern did once upon a time. And she's got some help out there, too. Another guy here that's going to go down really hard, and I hate to say it for him, because I almost kind of like the guy, except for a couple of his issues, but I think he stuck his foot in it hard. Senator John McCain. This by Jim Kuchenheim, about less than an hour ago, hit the AP. McCain calls for an end to independent ads. Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney and rival John McCain's campaign sparred month today over an independent group's advertising campaign that is promoting McCain's stance on security and spending issues. Romney, campaigning in New Hampshire, cited the organization, the Foundation for a Secure and Prosperous America, noting that it is not required to identify its donors. It can accept contributions of any size. Hang on here one second. Here, take this thing. All right, there we go. Somebody trying to find a phone here. All right, McCain, it's an entire end run on any effort to control campaign spending and offer transparency, Romney said. He added that legislation championed by McCain in 2002 to overhaul campaign finances turned out to be a failure. Now, McCain on Monday asked his donors and backers to cease and desist immediately from supporting advertising efforts that are not officially connected to his Republican presidential campaign, but that promote his stance on political issues. McCain, who has been a longtime critic of such independent expenditures, specifically singled out Republican media strategist and former McCain advisor Rick Reed and urged him to stop running ads that portray McCain and two congressional allies as leaders on national security and frugal government spending. The Arizona senator made no reference to Romney, but in a blistering statement, McCain senior advisor Mark Salter noted that Romney, a wealthy former venture capitalist, has pumped millions of his own money into the campaign and once supported the changes in campaign law that McCain helped push through Congress 5 years ago. Mitt Romney once promised not to self-fund his campaign and ever since has been busy robbing his kids' inheritance to do just that, Salter said in the statement. If hypocrisy were an Olympic sport, Mitt Romney would be a multiple gold medal winner. Now, the reference to Olympics was a swipe at Romney, who often points to his management of the 2002 Salt Lake City Olympics as an example of his executive skills. Now, McCain's statement today elaborated on his condemnation of the ads Friday, after the AP first reported on the existence of the new group. The ad, created by Reed and running in South Carolina, salutes McCain and Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, and Representative John Shadegg, Republican from McCain's home state of Arizona. Graham is backing McCain's presidency, and South Carolina is one of the early primary states in the presidential nominating contest. Anyone who believes they could assist my campaign by exploiting a loophole in campaign finance laws is doing me and our country a disservice, McCain said. I ask all of my donors and supporters, including Mr. Reed, to cease and desist immediately from supporting any independent expenditures that might be construed as benefiting my campaign indirectly. If you respect me or my principles, I urge you to refrain from using my name and image in any ads or any other activities. Now, Reed said last week that the group is being financed by McCain donors. On Monday, he said the foundation was not designed to help any single candidate. It's a broad issue group that welcomes political adherents of any stripe, he said. Now, later, Reed posted a statement on the foundation's website emphasizing the group's goal of securing congressional approval for legislation financing the troops. The statement doesn't mention McCain. They're there because we sent them there, and that the notion that one soldier could be wounded or killed because Congress delayed in its solemn duty to provide support and equipment is sickening, Reed's web statement said. On this Veterans Day, call your senators and congressmen and tell them to stop playing politics with our soldiers' lives. The group, established under tax laws, such as a 501c4 organization, can raise money in unlimited amounts from donors whose identities do not have to be disclosed. Such nonprofits can run political ads as long as they do not expressly advocate the victory or defeat of a political candidate. They also must show that the ad campaign is part of a broader mission related to an issue, not a candidate. Independent groups cannot coordinate their strategies with a political campaign. A restriction that McCain has said prevents him from asking Reed personally to stop the ads. I can't do that because that's against the law, he said Sunday on Fox News. McCain was one of the authors of the 2002 law that eliminated unlimited contributions or soft money to political parties. His image as a campaign finance reformer has been especially popular with independent voters who could play a role in New Hampshire primary. McCain won the state's primary in 2000 and is courting on the state again to give him the boost he needs to succeed in subsequent nominating contests. That can explain his strong and repeated denouncement of the ad. On Monday, the McCain campaign also released its own ad in New Hampshire focused on spending issues. The 32nd spot, running in New Hampshire and Boston markets, cites millions of dollars of congressional earmarks on items such as a bridge in Alaska that led to a sparsely populated island, for a DNA study of bears, for a woodcock museum as examples of pork barrel spending. The ad shows McCain walking at President Reagan's side at work and on a campaign trail. "I'll stop wasteful spending by Congress," McCain said, "and restore Americans' trust in our government." Now, that's where I wanted to open up here tonight, folks. Campaign finance. Now, aside from the fact that I think McCain is shooting himself in the foot with this, the law, as written, it's like any other law or legislation of this type, which I don't call it a law. It's legislation. All it does is create these loopholes. You know, what good has campaign finance reform done at this point in time? Who has it really stopped? Has it stopped the likes of George Soros moving money anywhere? You know, I look at what it has gone on here with Hillary starting up the Media Matters crew. You know, backed with George Soros' money. More and more of this is all coming all along, and it's coming from every which direction, and you're going to see it. And, you know, it's like, tell me something. Is this free speech being modified here or what? Are they squashing our free speech? Or do you folks out there think that, you know, whoever should be allowed to say whatever and spend whatever to promote somebody? I mean, you know, look at this room right here. Now, we haven't done it yet. We're on our way. You know, bar none. At some point in time here, I am going to totally endorse one of the presidential candidates. Or the most likely, Duncan Hunter, for those of you who are curious about this. But when it gets rolling, how much money are we going to be able to raise for him? How much is it going to be put in here? Are we going to have to form some kind of a 401c4 corporation to do this? Is it going to be labeled as soft money, or is it going to be hard money? What's going to happen here? You know, this is what I need to do. This is what we need to talk about here tonight, folks. Campaign finance. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Campaign finance reform? Are we going to get anywhere? Is it really squash your free speech? Is it going to help any of these guys? I don't see many hands going up here. And if I don't, if there's my man Terry. Terry, it's time for you to weigh in on this subject. Campaign finance reform. Something to get rid of totally, or something that we should just keep finding ways around?
This is Terry Wilson from St. Louis, Missouri, in case you all didn't know. It's been going on from time and time and time again, but now it's gotten more brutal and brutal. The thing of it is, I don't mind a person contributing to a certain party. But when they put out certain lies and they can't even, you know, verify what they're saying, I think at this point it's gone too far. And that's where money, see, that's where money buys an election. You know, when you don't have to substantiate the difference between right and wrong, and you can just throw out the money there, you know. But, hey, is this democracy? Is this what it was intended? I don't know. You tell me, man. I mean, I don't know anymore. You know, I'm seeing things. You know, I'm learning things. I'm seeing things that I've never seen before in the history of this country. You know, I'm seeing new written let's say hide soft money. You know, I've seen billions of dollars of soft money hidden. You know, I'm only allowed to give out so much soft money, all right? But I can get through that soft money by giving out through other ways and means. Is this the way it really is supposed to be? I don't know. You tell me. That's all Terry Hunt wants to know, is you tell me, is this the way it's supposed to be?
No, not to me. You know, the way I see it, free speech is free speech. And money follows good ideas. You know, it's that simple. If you've got a good idea and you're out there, people will throw money at it. It's an investment. It's just like anything else, you know. There's and if it's going to benefit you, sure you are. Ain't no bad about it. You know, everybody's going after the money these days. Even Al Gore. There's something here I'll get into later on. You know, Al Gore he joined a very famous Silicon Valley venture capital firm. But we'll get into that a little bit later on. You know, capitalist that he is. You know, I guess they've hired him on to get his expertise on global warming and where we can go with it. But it's you know, it's one of those things. Speaking of that, well, no, I'm not going to get into that right now. But the whole campaign finance reform, I think it's moot. I think they should just turn around and blast that whole thing right out of there. You know, because what it is designed to do, it's not doing. You know, each and every one of these, I mean, what is it? They got a $2,000 limit from different corporations. So what do you find happening here? You know, Hillary Clinton's got this guy Shu out there, you know, getting $2,000 and $3,000 input from different waiters at Chinese restaurants all around the San Francisco area. You know, one guy who donated, what, $35,000 or $40,000, and only made, or donated $75,000 in a year when he only made $40,000. We got, you know, craziness is just reigning supreme, and these people are just, it's a joke the way it is. So I don't understand why they just don't let, look, the way I see it, if you got a good idea, then money should be allowed to flow to your good idea, and you should be able to spread your good idea. That's why people throw the money at you, so to help you spread your ideas. If it wasn't a good idea, nobody's going to throw any money at it. You know, it's obviously a good idea for somebody. But, yeah, let's face it. You know, there's enough out there, and there's enough room, and there's enough room on this Internet to share enough information to get everybody to have their word in there. You know, I don't think anybody can really say that money just buys it anymore. I really don't. I certainly don't think it's going to help the Democrats this time. All right, my buddy Bill, you're up. Take the mic.
Well, thank you there, Mr. Belcher. It's good to hear from you. How you doing? You know, whatever happened to the day when you could tell your kids you can be anything you want when you grow up? You can grow up to be president. Well, now it's you can be anything you want when you grow up. You can be president. All you need is about $20 million startup money. I think we're overlooking so many good people for our government, Congress, President, whatever it may be, who are such good people but don't have the money. Is this what it's boiled down to in America? It's all about the money? And what about Shu? When is the other shoe going to drop? Anybody seen him lately? Has anybody tracked where the money went? Boy, I think it's a bad time when America's greatest ideas are put to the wayside just for money. Boy, that could bring up global warming, couldn't it? Thanks again, Mark.
Yeah. Oh, my pleasure. No, it's, you know, it's, I think it's just the opposite, though, Bill. I hear what you're saying, but I don't think there's that many good men out there that are suffering because of the money. So I think if they are good men, they got good ideas, I think the money finds them. I really do. My friend Unit, you've got your hand up. Go right ahead, buddy.
Yeah, people always say money buys the elections, but if that were true, we would have had President Steve Forbes. You can have all the money in the world, and if you're a kook, people still are not going to vote for you. Anybody, if they have a good idea and they can convince enough people in order to get elected, but you have to convince millions of people, you should be able to raise the money. And BB's right. If you're going to have a First Amendment, you have a First Amendment. You don't have a First Amendment that says, you know, you can have free speech, but you can't have free speech here, you can't have free speech here. And when there's an election, you can't criticize a politician who you don't like. Now, the McCain-Feingold bill was an assault on the First Amendment. That's all it was. It was saying that if I'm the National Rifle Association and I don't like a candidate, I can't run ads against that candidate close to an election where I could actually do something about it. It's an assault on the First Amendment. The politicians are tired of having to listen to interest groups. The best campaign finance reform is to eliminate all the rules and simply say the only rule is you get some money from somebody, you have to publish it immediately who's giving you the money. That's all the rules you need.
Well, I think there needs to be one other rule in it, and I think that needs to be a slander rule. You know, if you slander a person's reputation, I think that at that point, you know, you should be liable to what comes your way. You know, and I don't see that. You know, what I see is a media frenzy out there, and it doesn't matter what side of the fence you're on, but you can pretty much slander anybody who runs for president, who runs for any political office, and just slander them, and no repercussions are taken, and that's my problem. That's it.
Yeah, but they haven't really done anything to stop that, as far as the slamming goes. I mean, what they do is they turn around and they slam the issues nowadays. Look at what the AARP is doing. You know, I got my renewal for them the other day to send the money in and go with it. No, I'm not sending them anything. I'm sorry, I don't like the way they're slamming issues. You know, they're touting this and that, but the one thing that they're really crying for is universal health care. Now, I understand seniors need to get taken care of. You know, there's no doubt about that. But there's, you know, hey, folks, you know, you're also doing things like advertising for all the supplemental plans out there. I think it's what you ought to do is stick to that. You know, and I think what you ought to do as the old folks is get back into your churches and stuff and go where that stuff originated and work there and see to it that it gets done. You know, I really do. It's a goofy thing. You know, they keep asking the government to do things of this nature, and where are they going to get, you know, how they without expecting, you know, or figuring out how the government's going to pay for this, how they're actually going to perform it, and why it is that you just want some big forceful machine to do your job for you. It's ridiculous, but still, this is it. You know, back like I say, they have no problem just slamming issues, you know, and expecting you to come up with the obvious answer that obviously a Democrat's going to fix this for you, which they're not. You know, I mean, you know, once again, go over to Hillary Clinton for president. com, and look at what she's going to do. She's nothing. She's got thousands of little programs that she wants to start up out there without ever explaining how she's going to go about doing any of it or what she's going to run into in Congress or anything else. You know, it's absolutely ridiculous. I think candidates should be allowed to come out and say what they want, and I think anybody that wants to back those candidates should just be able to go for it. All right, moving right along here. Let's head on. I did want to get to some other news out there. Speaking of Hillary and the rest of the socialist agenda coming from the left, all these fine people that want us to go about going with the way other countries do things need to take a hard look at what's going on in some of these other countries. Two of them in particular here, the top communist country out there, one of the few that's still actually calling it a communist country, is Cuba. And Cuba has got some problems. This down off the AP, actually came down this morning, or off of Reuters, I'm sorry, by Mr. Anthony Bodel. Cubans debate change, but they ask, where's the beef? Change is a word that can still get you into trouble in communist China, yet it is on everyone's lips these days. As the nation debates a future without ailing leader Fidel Castro, expectations are rising that changes will come, at least in the way the one-party state runs the economic life of its 11 million people. But 15 months after the 81-year-old Castro fell ill and his brother Raul became acting president, few policy changes have been made, and Cubans are wondering when they will come. In meetings held over the last 2 months in neighborhoods, workplaces, and Communist Party cells, Cubans criticized the shortcomings of the socialist system born from Castro's 1959 revolution, venting their frustration with 16 years of hardships since the Soviet Union collapsed. And I'll never forget, folks, it was the only thing that was really keeping them alive was the Soviet Union. People stood up to complain about low wages, high food prices, poor housing, restrictions on travel, and above all, a two-tiered monetary system that limits access to consumer goods to those Cubans with hard currency. We want deeds, not words. Before, we had money and there was nothing to buy. Now the shops are full, but we have no money, said a Havana housewife who did not give her name. Raul Castro, who is considered more open to market reforms than his brother, has encouraged media exposes of glaring faults in the 90% owned or 90% state-owned economy. His call also paved the way for the nationwide process of public meetings. In a July 26 speech this year, the younger Castro, 76, said structural changes were needed in agriculture to kickstart Cuba's deficient food production. Yet in recent weeks, at least 20 youths wearing wristbands with the word cambio, meaning political change, were detained by police for several hours and reprimanded for wearing counter-revolutionary propaganda, allegedly supplied by the U.S. diplomatic mission in Havana. Cubans want a change of mentality because this system doesn't work anymore, said Luis Miguel, a state employee who hitched a ride on Havana's Malecón C Boulevard. No one owns anything, so they don't look after anything and steal from the state to get by, he said. Things must change, everyone said the same at the meeting. They have to do something now that they have heard people speak their minds, said Jose, a traveling agency manager who did not want to be fully named for fear of losing his job. Like many Cubans, both men agreed that a bureaucratic state should not be running small businesses, from restaurants and bars to shoe shines and barber shops. Cuban officials say they are processing thousands of reports on proposals made at the meetings between August and October, and decisions will be taken in due course. Economists expect the thrust of reform will be to expand the role of private farmer cooperatives to raise production and reduce reliance on imported food, including purchases from Cuba's ideological archenemy, the United States. Under Raul Castro, arrears have been paid to farmers and prices trebled for their milk and meat, boosting output. Inhabitants of Cienfuegos, 160 miles southwest of Havana, were startled last month to receive half a pound of beef per person in their monthly ration for the first time since Cuba's post-Soviet crisis began in 1991. Imagine that. We were so happy because it showed we are recovering from the big crisis, said teacher Yamirez Perez. Beef rations have long been restricted to children, the elderly, and ill people. Can you imagine that? Rationing beef? Devastating floods in eastern Cuba following Tropical Storm Noel 2 weeks ago set back farming and should lead the government to speed up policy changes, according to assistant economist Oscar Espinoza Chepe, who said Cuba must hand out fast tracks of unused land to private farmers. Chepes does not, however, expect political changes in the near future, since the state can easily repress discontent. A European business man in Havana said that was not likely. I missed the line there. No big deal. But basically, folks, you hear what's happening down in here. All right? You know, and every now and then I hear people, and there are Americans that travel down to Cuba and get around down there, and I hear them talk, oh, you know, those people, they don't do things like we do up here. You know, they have a much easier, much more laid-back lifestyle. No, they just have, they're idle. They have nothing to do. And there's no point in putting into it because you don't own any of your production. The state owns it. So what is that? What happens when that goes on, you know? And I love the students out there that will sit there and tell you all this, too. You know, guys, I'll tell everybody in the room. You run into a young kid that's going to tell you that socialism is the way to go in the future, just stop and ask him how well socialism would work in his own classroom. You say, well, how's that going to happen? Well, look at it this way. Just suppose that everybody in the class was going to get a C for everything that they did. Doesn't matter. If it was a homework, a test, no matter how well you did on it, you're going to get a C. Who would work to turn out anything exemplary? Who would work for an A? Well, if there's no A available, you don't work for an A. If there's no B available, you wouldn't work for a B. And if the best, the worst thing that can happen to you is going to be a C, well, why bother turning out anything? You're going to get a C anyway. You know? And that exactly is why, you know, socialism just doesn't work. Now, on top of that, we have another socialist utopia working its way up down here. This off of ABC News by Brian Ellsworth, who actually took it off of Reuters here. And out of Caracas, Venezuelan construction worker Gustavo Arteaga has no trouble finding jobs in this OPEC nation's booming economy. But on a recent Monday morning, he skipped work as part of a more complicated search for milk. The 37-year-old father of two has for months scrambled to find basic products like cooking oil, beef, and milk. Despite leftist President Hugo Chavez's social program that promises to provide low-cost groceries to the majority poor. It takes a miracle to find milk, said Arteaga, who spent 2 hours in line outside a store in the poor Caracas neighborhood of Eucalyptus. Don't you see I'm slaving away here to see if I can get even one or two of those containers? Venezuelan consumers are increasingly facing periodic shortages of basic food products as the economy shows signs of overheating amid record revenues from an oil boom. The shortages have increased skepticism of Chavez's economic policies and provided a political backdrop to campaigning this month for a referendum on a new constitution that he says is needed to make Venezuela a socialist state. Businesses say price controls on staple foods are so low they discourage investment and force stores to sell at a loss. The government says the problem is caused by a growing demand by poor citizens who benefit from social programs, exaggerated media hype, and food hoarding by unscrupulous businesses. Supermarket shelves remain stocked with aged whiskey and imported wine, but for up to 25% of staple food products this year have been irregular, according to public opinion and economic research group data analysis. The group says Venezuelans waste several hours a week trawling for food. Retailers ration their supplies, and some even stamp customers' hands so they do not line up twice. Friendships are won with a text message tip that a store has just put milk on its shelves. Opposition comparisons to bare shelves in Chavez's ally Cuba are still greatly exaggerated. But even poor Venezuelans who back the anti-U.S. president complain of being stuck in long lines or having to visit several stores to get groceries. We've warned about this from the beginning. All of those price controls in the long run end up producing shortages, says Ismael Perez of the industry group Conindustria. Perez says businesses fear holding sufficient inventories due to an anti-hoarding law, a problem highlighted by a seizure this month of 125 tons of powdered milk from Switzerland's Nestle, the world's largest food company. Chavez remains widely popular after winning a landslide re-election last year, and pollsters say he will win approval in December in a December referendum for a constitutional overhaul that will let him run for re-election indefinitely. The former soldier this year nationalized swaths of the economy and stepped up enforcement of price controls the state decreed in 2003, but the businesses had largely ignored. Now the combination of the controls and unprecedented consumer spending has left businesses like Cueva de Iria, a typical bakery that sells coffee, pastries, and fresh-baked bread, struggling to find the ingredients it needs. Everything relating to flour and sugar is a problem. We call our providers, and they say they don't have any, manager Lino Alves says. We only have enough milk to put in coffee. A black market has sprung up where informal vendors illegally peddle bags of sugar, beans, and precious powdered milk for as much as double the regulated price. The state's Consumer Protection Agency, backed by military reserves, often shutters supermarkets for selling above the fixed price. But vendors offer their goods from makeshift stands in downtown Caracas in plain view of authorities. This is an insult, but I can't find it anywhere, said Jose Ferrer, paying nearly $12 for a can of powdered milk regulated at 6. I have to buy it for my kids. There is no other way. The economy grew by a record 10% in 2006, and millions of Venezuelans received government stipends to participate in education and community development programs. All of Chavez's most popular programs, is a chain of subsidized supermarkets scattered across rural areas and in hillside slums that sells food at fixed prices unaffected by rampant inflation, although it too has been hit by shortages. I like everything the president is doing. He's helping poor people, said Maria Pena, 48, a homemaker waiting in line for milk. The only thing I do not like is waiting in line. You should have talked to some of the Russians before they got involved in all that. That's been happening over there forever, and it was part of what brought the whole Soviet Union down. You know, they would open up a store over there. The line was outside the store. The same thing was happening. Word would get out that they had bread, they had this, they had that. The line would end up outside the store, and the line would stay there. The line would still be there after they ran out of the product. You know, this is what happens in a society where you do not get to keep what it is that you earn. I mean, it's that simple. You know, when everything is owned by the state, or you are working for the state, you are going to get a fixed amount. You know, it's just like anywhere else. I mean, look at places that pay, you know, factories and stuff that pay by the hour. They move at the rate of the slowest person in there. And nobody's going to work any faster. The guy that's the slowest that gets away with working there constantly at his slow pace that maintains his job there. Now, don't forget, if he gets too slow, they'll fire him. But the guy that gets away with it the slowest, he controls the speed of the whole place, controls the output of the whole place. And anybody that works in a place like that, they know exactly what I'm talking about. This is what you have. You know, and when you run a whole country like that, well, what do you expect? All right, Terry, you got your hand up there, my friend. Go right ahead.
Yeah, Mark, I was wanted to be brief. This is Terry Wilson from Missouri, St. Louis, Missouri. And I just wanted to be brief about this. Education is a big thing when it comes to third world nations. And I learned this as a young age. You got, and most of their milk supplies come from goats. You know, and you got the Billy, and you got the nanny, and you can squeeze and squeeze and squeeze as much as you want on that Billy, but you may only get a sliver of cheese. That's all I had. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Terry. Sean, you got your hand up.
I'm Sean from North Carolina. I know some of these people in here. Like one of y'all were saying, I can't remember which one, about school. Yeah, it is important. I'm still in school, matter of fact. I come here almost every day now. When I get home from work, school, learn as much as I can. Sometimes I come in here asking for ideas, and trying to get ahead of my class, little stuff like that. Show Will knows a little bit of it. Tater does. I know a whole bunch of administrators, not all of them, but some of them. Yeah, sometimes I just come in here and tell y'all what I'm learning, and I try and learn about it. So if any of y'all can help me with some of that, I'd be glad. Send me a message back, please. Whoever's next can have the mic.
Yeah, all right, Sean. Thanks for stopping in here. You are on a radio show tonight. We are the Politics Cafe, broadcasting around the world. www.herncoat.com and the ASI Radio Network. All right. Yeah, thanks for stopping in here. You know, there's a, well, you just got a good lesson right there. Just imagine how much would happen. How much work do you think your classmates and you would do if you were guaranteed a C on every test and every homework, even if you didn't turn anything in, you know? Or even if, you know, the minimum you turned in was fine. You know, or better yet, just suppose you were the A student in the class, one that's constantly turning out the best stuff. And the teacher came up and said to you, you know, we know you're a great guy, but we've got to share the wealth. So the extra stuff that you do for each of your reports and each of your tests, you're going to give to a guy down there that doesn't quite have your level of achievement. Now, because of this, I'm going to have to just give you a C, even though you're turning in A work. But that extra work will be used to give Mr. F over there a C also. You will level the playing field that way. Doesn't that sound like a better world? Now, how long do you think you're going to let him take your work and give it to somebody that isn't doing any work whatsoever? Yeah, stop and think about that for a minute. You know, it's just not going to happen. Not in this world. All right, moving right along here. I got another quick topic here before we hit the top of the hour. And might be some good news to some of you out there. To the rest of us, it's going to be something we're going to have to keep our eye on closely. This is off of Reuters, and it actually came down Friday, but I haven't heard much talk about it, why I brought it up here tonight. The House of Representatives on Friday passed a bill to prevent millions of middle-income Americans from being caught in a tax meant for the very wealthy, and partly paid for the relief by raising taxes on rich private equity fund managers. The House voted 216 to 193, mostly along party lines for the bill, which would ensure that about 20 million taxpayers do not pay the alternative minimum tax when they file their 2007 income tax returns early next year. No Republicans supported the bill, and 8 Democrats broke with their party leaders and voted against it. Republicans opposed the bill because it also included a provision that would require private equity fund managers to pay regular income taxes of as much as 35% on their earnings, instead of the current 15% capital gains tax rate they now pay. The $78 billion bill goes to the Senate, where provisions raising taxes on private equity managers face even stiffer opposition. The White House opposes raising taxes on the financiers and said President George W. Bush would veto the bill if it goes to him with a revenue-raising provision. Excuse me. The lawmakers are under pressure to act quickly on the alternative minimum tax relief. The tax was first enacted in 1969 to ensure the very wealthy did not take advantage of so many tax breaks that they paid no taxes at all. But because of inflation, the tax now looms over more middle-income people. Full repeal would be costly to the federal treasury, about $800 billion over 10 years, and Congress has been enacting a series of temporary relief bills to hide the budget impact. If lawmakers fail to act soon, about 20 million taxpayers could be hit with the tax when they file their 2007 income tax returns starting in January. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson said he was concerned that federal tax refunds to millions of taxpayers could be delayed because Congress waited so long to act on the AMT issue. I urge Congress to enact one-year AMT relief without raising taxes as quickly as possible, so the IRS can adjust and complete its preparations for the upcoming filing season with the least possible delays and confusion to taxpayers, Paulson said in a statement. Now, Republicans argued that Congress should abandon rules that require any tax cut to be paid for by other revenue increases, since middle-income earners were never meant to pay the alternative minimum tax. Representative David Dreyer, a California Republican, said it was absolute lunacy to adhere to the pay-as-you-go rule on the alternative minimum tax. The bill would also limit the ability of hedge fund managers to defer income and taxes on it through offshore tax havens. It also would extend a number of popular business tax breaks, including the research and development tax credit. Democrats said they did not want to add to the nation's mounting debt, which reached $9 trillion this week, and that changing the rules for private equity fund partnerships was a matter of fairness. Who in the world would believe that it's fair for corporations and partnerships to be doing the same work, except one pays 15% because they have created in their imagination that their work is really capital when they take no risk, and the others get 35%, said House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Charles Rangel. Fairness dictates this is not a tax increase. This is closing of a loophole, said Rangel. Senate Finance Committee Chairman Max Baucus has said he would move the bill quickly. The Montana Democrat has acknowledged in the past it would be difficult to move the bill through the Senate that raises taxes on private equity fund managers, but has promised to fix the alternative minimum tax problem. Millions of American families are counting on us to act, and we will, Baucus said in a statement on Friday. The Private Equity Council, which represents many wealthy fund managers, said it would fight any tax increase that could dampen economic growth at a time of an unsettling economy and graying financial markets. Well, folks, here you have it. A little bit of a mishmash there, but I am going to definitely keep my eye on this. Basically, what they're saying out there is that guys who are managers of equity funds, or other investors or whatnot, are basically only paying capital gains tax on the funds that they make, 15%. That's it. But they're not paying anything as an income tax because they're not really employees of a company who is paying them a bill. Now, whether or not that this is something that needs to have a look at, by Congress, the way they're doing it, because what's going to end up happening is we're going to turn around and tell these guys, look, the only way you're going to get around this, or the only way that we're going to accept this, is if you form the corporation that and become an employee of your own corporation and pay the whole tax. Otherwise you're just going to pay the whole tax, and you might as well just do it anyway. Now, it's such a mishmash, and what it does in the end is just add more confusion to the whole IRS thing out there. what it calls for, best I can see here, fair tax, folks. It's the best way to go about it. It's time to drop the whole idea of income taxes altogether and head off to the fair tax. You know, it's the best way to go. I highly recommend that you take a look at the fair tax on the internet. And maybe we'll get into this next week here, and we'll take a look a little closer at the fair tax. Duncan Hunter, by the way, is all for the fair tax. It's a very smart thing. Fair tax is just something that they're, I think they're talking anywhere from 17 to 23% of a tax on all new goods sold in the marketplace. It's an enforceable tax because all these markets are already set up out there. They already have their accounts. They've already got government watchdogs looking at them. There are ways to go about this. You know, everything else will be free. You know, you stop and think about it. We're talking about no income taxes whatsoever. I think the boom to the economy would definitely make it worthwhile. I mean, you got to look at it this way. If they're taking 25% of your money now in taxes, okay, and you get to keep that 25%, you're paying a 17% tax on everything that you buy, or at least on all the new products that you buy, well, you're still coming out way ahead in the end. Now, of course, you know, people are going to look and say, well, that's going to hurt the poor. Fact of the matter is, though, people making under $50,000 a year under the fair tax plan are already getting a monthly stipend check. And that's what's going to happen. They will basically be paying no taxes. In order for them to cover whatever it is, the government is going to just issue them a check for, I don't know, what is it, $400 a person for people living in everybody living in your house? A family of five is going to get a $2,000 check every month from the government. So it's kind of like, look, if you're only making $30,000 a year, well, you just went to 50 or 60, okay? Maybe you'll pay a little bit of tax. But up to $50,000, you're not paying anything. You know, and you're going to get that money in as income. It's just too good a system to overlook. All right, Terry, my friend, you've got your hand up again. Take it. It's yours.
Well, BB, I appreciate what you have to say there, and I agree 100% with a fair tax plan. I can tell you right now, you know, between the Fed and the state, which is 6%, that I pay 41%. And I think that it's too much, you know, for what I do, you know. So, you know, I think it's, you know, when I'm putting people to work, when those people are paying taxes, and they come back and they hit me with 41%, this year will be $13 million in taxes. You know, I just think it's too much, man. I think it's way, way too much, and I don't know how it's going to change. You know, I wish it would, but it seems like the people that create the jobs, that create the economy, that create the taxes, you know, and those people, man, right now, what I see, man, are being hit the hardest, and not only you guys probably think that, well, you know, I'm crazy, or this, or I'm that, but it doesn't matter, you know. I'd be more than happy to send you my tax return. You know, in proof. Thank you, BB.
No, I hear you, Terry, and you're absolutely right. That's what happens here. You know, these people who want to raise your taxes out there, because I'm going to say Democrats, you know, they all think that these people that are making all this big money, you know, on the backs of the poor, are just going to keep on making that money no matter what happens. They will always find a way, according to them. Even though, you know, when they whale these people and they see the way that the big guy finds to keep on making money, you know, adversely affects the entire economy. Because what does he do? You know, you are a big guy, or you're a guy, let's say you're a guy with an idea. Say you have no money, okay, but you've got a great idea for a product. You sat down, you draw up all the plans for this product. You put together a prospectus that's going to show any potential investors that this is going to be the greatest product in the world. And bang, off you go. You move into some place where you, you're even going to get a little bit of a tax break for opening a new business. Every state does this every once in a while. You know, they want to move stuff in there. Michigan's doing it pretty good right now, from what I understand. But you're in there, you get your business whacked up. The next thing you know, you're in there 2 years, you're finally starting to show a bit of a profit, maybe three, you know. You got to show something in 5 years or they're going to shut you down. It's that simple. And then suppose 3-4 years down the road, you start showing a profit. You're starting to make money. You're starting to get some return for your investors. You're starting to see some money in your own pocket. You're seeing your hard work, your life, your guts, and everything else that you spilled into it coming to fruition. You look at all the people out there that are now working because of your idea and because of the money that your financiers put into it. You know, jobs that were created by you and by the financiers, jobs that didn't exist before. I'm not going to say that these people weren't working at something else before, but obviously whatever they were working at before, they left to come to work for you because you prefer, you know, you offered them something a little better, or you offered something to people that had absolutely nothing. But either way you look at it, you know, your work created jobs for other people. You performed a service for the economy. Now all of a sudden they're going to start spanking you with this tax, spanking you with that tax, spanking with regulations that require you to spend money to the government here, spend money to the government over there. And what do you do? Wow. What does any guy like that do? He takes his business elsewhere, especially if he's got a good idea, it's a good product, and people are going to keep on buying his product. So, next thing you know, there goes your job overseas, some Indian is doing it, or some Chinaman is doing it, or somebody in the Philippines, or somebody in Malaysia, somebody down in Mexico. 41% is just too much, Terry. I mean, what is it? People now work till the 25th of May each year to pay all their taxes. You know, you're giving half to the government, and you get to keep the other half. But is half what you're working for? I mean, you know, that half, is that what you agreed to do when you took the job? You know, did you agree to do to just take half or whatever it was when you opened up that business, when you created all these jobs for those other people? I don't think so. You know, and the worst part about it is that 41% is probably an average, Terry. And you know what's the killer part about it, Terry? If you were to take that business over to communist China, that 41% would go down to 25%. Now explain to me why a world-class businessman, somebody who is making products and creating jobs for people everywhere in the world, why would he want to do business in this country when he can get a better deal with the government in a communist country? What's the point of that? All right, my friend Unit, and I forget your first name. It escapes me. The mic is all yours, my friend.
Yeah, we can have a fair tax, flat tax, this tax, that tax. The taxes are still going to have to be high unless you control spending. So people's reactions, thinking somehow you're going to jigger around with the tax system and solve the basic problem. The basic problem is Uncle Sugar Daddy is on the hook for providing too many goodies for too many people, and he needs the money. So whether he gets it with a 23% consumption tax or income taxes or flat taxes, he's still going to need a lot of his money, our money. So I don't think taxes are the problem. I think any kind of tax system would be fine with me if they would just spend less money so they could lower the taxes.
Now you got a good point there. And I'll tell you, there's only one guy out there that I'm looking at right now that's really looking at ways of cutting spending. Duncan Hunter, once again, take a look at his website. Now, he only really makes one special mention in there, but it's always been my pet peeve. You know, the National Endowment for the Arts. He would do away with that one altogether, you know, and what money was still floating around, if it had to go somewhere, if you couldn't give it back to the public in the form of a tax cut, then he plans to spend it on education. The man's right, you know, look at some of his other issues there. You know, I think it's the same way. I mean, look at all the money they spend out there on research and grants. That grant process is something, you know how many liberals out there live on the grant process? Because these people are expert at coming up with crazy ideas and then getting the government to fund it for them. And it could be anything, you know, like the Woodcock Institute you were looking at there before, the Bridge to Nowhere, or what have you. But, you know, they don't even have to come up with a product. They don't have to come up with a usable service, any kind of goods or anything at all. No, they just got to come up with some explanation for their idea and how this might be nice if we were to try this. And it's ridiculous. Billions of dollars go down that way. You know, and still, that money there, which should be heading into the schools, into colleges, funding education, doesn't go there, and the kids end up getting strapped with education loans that they can, you know, barely ever pay off. Now, it's just nuts. I don't know. The situation's got to get changed around out there. And like I say, the more I look at Duncan Hunter, the more I like his policies. The man's head is definitely going straight when it comes down to that spending issue. No doubt about it. At any rate, folks, we've hit the top of the hour here. It's time for www.hernco.com and the ASI Radio Network to sell a few goods. Willie's probably going to play a video or two here in the room, but we are at a break. Folks, you're listening to the Politics Cafe, www.hernco.com and the ASI Radio Network. Broadcast from Politics Lobby 4, Secure Our Borders Voice Room at paltalk.com. We'll be right back.
Meeting new friends online can be hard to do at times. Chatting to complete strangers, sharing cams with each other, and even sharing music. Can all this be done safely? No spyware, viruses attached to my computer. Absolutely. PalTalk lets you chat, video cam, share music with family and friends, including free chat rooms where you can talk to each other about any topic that is on your mind. There is a category for everyone. Which one are you in? Find it on PalTalk today. www.paltalk.com. www.paltalk.com.
In a time where good and evil have become completely distorted, one bright ray of light shines through. Politics Lobby 4. A modern day battle of epic proportions. One light, many voices. Frontline with Kit Murphy. The Politics Cafe with Mark Belcher. And the Extreme Forum with Randy Wright. Good versus evil. Light against dark. And fact versus fiction. Stay informed, arm yourself, and prepare for the battle. www.politicslobby4.com. Now is the time.
ASI. Audio. Are you ready? Video. Interactive. And you can catch it all. That's right, at ASI.
Hello, my friends. America, and indeed the world, has reached a crossroads in history. The global war on terror is real, and our servicemen and women, as well as their families, have felt it firsthand. This is why I, everyone's favorite self-appointed activist judge, Chief Justice Randy Wright, am inviting you to visit politicslobby4.com. That's www.politicslobby4.com to show support for our troops. Join shows such as Frontline with Kit Gerald and the Politics Cafe. Remember, we're in this fight together. Thank you.
Hey, this is Bill from politicslobby4.com reminding you to join us throughout the week for the best radio programs the internet has to offer. Shows like Frontline with Kit Berg, saluting our military and their families. The Politics Cafe with Mark Belcher, news and commentary from a regular guy. And the Extreme Court with Randy Wright, today's issues and Constitution. And when I say join us, that's just what I mean. Join us. Be a part of the show. Hope to see you there. That's www.politicslobby4.com.
thing. Hey, Marcy. We better get going. We don't want to be late for the Hillary Clinton rally.
Oh, I'm still finishing up here, Jim. I'll meet you there. Okay.
You're a liberal Democrat, a committed feminist, and you know that America is ready for a woman president. But you're not sure that Hillary Clinton is that woman. You're anxious, conflicted. Maybe you're having trouble sleeping, or you're experiencing mood swings. You want a woman to be president so badly that even Rosie O'Donnell is starting to make sense. If these symptoms sound familiar, you could be suffering from HAS, Hillary Ambivalence Syndrome, an anxiety disorder that affects up to 1 in 3 Democrats.
Which is why we developed OxyClinton.
OxyClinton goes to work immediately, gently muting the harsh upper registers of Hillary's speaking voice. Next, OxyClinton lowers blood pressure elevated by Hillary's contradictory positions on Iraq, while its anti-inflammatory agents soothe and relax skin that's been crawling since Hillary did her black voice at that church in Alabama. OxyClinton is not for everyone, and side effects may include dizziness, nausea, blurred vision, higher taxes, massive unemployment, riots, chaos, and a total breakdown of the U.S. healthcare system. So ask your doctor if OxyClinton is right for you.
Come on, Jan, or we'll be late for that Hillary fundraiser.
Hey, wait for me!
If your enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton lasts more than 4 hours, consult your physician. OxyClinton.
Oh, that was great. Thanks, Willie. Folks, we're back. You're listening to the Politics Cafe, www.herncrow.com and the ASI Radio Network. Yeah, and that was fun. Poor Hillary. Nah. Blast that woman. This is great. Well, I'll tell you what. She's got more than this. This you will not hear coming out of her at all, especially over the last couple of days here. But we have got some good news. Time to move over to the Middle East here. It's this is from FoxNews.com. Both came down today. U.S. military rocket mortar attacks in Iraq down to the lowest levels. Rocket and mortar attacks in Iraq have decreased to their lowest levels in more than 21 months, the U.S. military said Monday. Last month saw 369 indirect fire attempts February 2006. October's till same month a year ago, and it marked the third month in a row of sharply reduced insurgent activity. The U.S. command issued the tallies a day after Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki said suicide attacks and other bombing in Baghdad have dropped them dramatically. He's actually calling it an end of sectarian violence. In the capital, an Iraqi taxi driver was shot dead by a private security guard protecting a convoy driving through the city, Iraqi police said Monday. Afterwards, police searched the man's taxi and found no weapons nor any other evidence of suspicious activities, said a police officer from the nearest station who spoke on condition of anonymity, one of my buddies here, because he was not authorized to release the information. The convoy did not stop for the investigation, the officer said. Total rocket and mortar attacks rose steadily from 808 in January 2000 to a peak of 1,032 in June, before falling over the next 4 months, a U.S. military statement said on Monday. That decline was also seen in Baghdad, where such attacks rose from 139 in January to 224 in June, and then fell to only 53 attacks in October, it said. The Iraqi spokesman for a U.S.-Iraqi push to pacify the capital said the decline in violence would allow the government to reopen 10 roads later this month. This will help reduce traffic jams and citizens will feel life returning to normal, Brigadier General Qasim al-Musawi told Iraqi state television. We're all realizing now that what Baghdad was seeing every day, dead bodies in the streets and morgues, is ebbing remarkably, al-Maliki told reporters Sunday at his office in the U.S. guarded Green Zone. Excuse me. There is an indication that sectarianism, intended as a gate of evil and fire in Iraq, is now closed, he said. Associated Press figures show a sharp drop in the number of U.S. and Iraqi deaths across the country in the past few months. The numbers of Iraqis who met violent deaths dropped from at least 1,023 in September to at least 905 in October, according to an AP account. The number of American military deaths fell from 65 to at least 39 over the same period. Before the arrival of nearly 30,000 U.S. reinforcements this past spring, explosions shook Baghdad daily, sometimes hourly. Mortar and rocket fire were frequent, as was the rhythm of gunfire. Now the sounds of warfare are rare. American troops have set up small outposts in some of the capital's most dangerous enclaves. Locals previously lukewarm to the presence of U.S. soldiers patrol alongside them. And a historic lane on the eastern banks of the Tigris is set to reopen later this year, lined with seafood restaurants and an art gallery. Major General Rick Lynch, commander of U.S. forces south of the capital, said Sunday he believed the decrease would hold because of what he called a groundswell of support from regular Iraqis. If we didn't have so many people coming forward to help, I'd think this is a flash in the pan. But that's just not the case, Lynch told a small group of reporters over lunch in the Green Zone. He attributed the sharp drop in attacks to the American troop buildup, the setup of small outposts at the heart of Iraqi communities, and help from thousands of locals fed up with al-Qaeda and other extremists. These people, Sunni and Shiite, are saying, I've had enough, Lynch said. Such local expertise has paid off for American troops and Iraqi counterparts, who have killed or captured about 3,000 insurgents in the area in the past year, Lynch said. Since November 2006, tips from local citizens have helped U.S. troops confiscate 2,470 rocket and mortar caches across Iraq, the U.S. military said. Also Monday, AP that Iraqi soldiers killed four men in clashes that lasted throughout the night. Hours after a tribal chieftain was killed in front of his village mosque, Iraqi soldiers stormed the area and engaged armed men in an hours-long battle, killing four of them and wounding two, said Tal Afar Mayor General Najim Abdullah. Troops also seized a machine gun and some rifles, he said. Abdullah said several other men were arrested and later confessed to the sheikh's killing as well as other murders in the area. He did not give a number of those arrested. Tal Afar is an ethnically mixed city of about 93 miles east of the Syrian border and 260 miles northwest of Baghdad. Now, there's good news that the Democrats just did not want to hear, which is the surge is working. All right, before I get to this next one, Bill, you got your hand up there. Go right ahead.
All right, BB, I just thought this would be a good time to thank you and every other veteran of the United States. Happy Veterans Day. What a great country we live in. What a great military we have. Thank you, guys. That's all.
Oh, smack me in the head for forgetting to say something about it. That's right, today we have celebrated Veterans Day. I celebrated it yesterday. I had a good old time. I got a buzz on, just had a great time, drank a few beers. Actually, I was drinking whiskey yesterday. It was a great day. Went out and shot some golf. Just acted... Happy Veterans Day with everybody. Just had a good old time. Yes. Thanks once again to all my brothers, soldiers, all my brothers in the Air Force, all my cousins in the Marines, and buddies in the Army and the Navy. You guys know who you are. Happy Veterans Day. It's, you know, the country cannot thank you enough. Probably never will thank you enough, but you guys know what you did. Yeah, I know what I did too, man. It was a... definitely well worthwhile, you know. It's an experience that you will never be able to trade for anything else. Nothing else was like it. You know, there's times when I miss the service. You know, it's funny. I mean, there was I remember, hey, the reason I got asked is my wife just couldn't stand me being away so much all the time. But I wish she would have let me stay. I'd still be there. Because I, you know, as hard as it was, and especially all the times you would find yourself doing something goofy like guarding a pile of blankets out on a flight line 15 below with snow falling all over you or something goofy like that, you know, it was still worth it. You still knew what you were doing. You were still providing a service for people. You were protecting the country. You were keeping the military on its feet, on its ears, making sure everything worked, making sure that well-oiled machine was there, ready to do its duty whenever. Just a beautiful thing. Ah, my friend, Mr. Rizzo, you've got your hand up. Go right ahead, buddy.
BB, I've known you for a long period of time and have always enjoyed your broadcast. but I'm afraid you're mistaken. I have a quote here from the Democratic Majority Leader of the Senate that clearly indicates that the war in Iraq is lost and that the surge is not working. Are you suggesting that Mr. Harry Reid, Senator Harry Reid, could be in error on his assessment of events in Iraq? Thank you.
I think Harry Reid's underwear is too tight. He ain't all. He is in all there. Let's face it. This guy has been, he's out of left field. I don't know where he gets his news from or who he's talking to, you know. The war is lost. We need to pull out of there. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, well, that was why half the reason I came on here tonight, just so he could be poo-pooed just a little bit more. he's dust. Him, Chucky up there, another one wants to pull us out of there. You know, the only one of them that's really being smart about all this and keeping her big mouth shut, and I'm sure she's having help keeping other people's mouths shut who are not asking her about this, but it's Hillary. You know, she supported the surge. She voted for it. She went for the next vote, for the last vote we had, to have more funds sent over there. You know, she was on board with that, believe it or not. You know, much to the dismay of people out there who want to get her elected. You know, but she'll flip and flop with the best of them, as far as I'm concerned. You know, she may not have the experience to run the presidential White House, or to be the president, you know. But as far as the underhanded tactics of Congress, well, I've always said that, or underhanded tactics of politicians, so to speak. You know, I've always said that any woman can teach the devil a few tricks. And I would imagine that she can teach him quite a few more. You know? Yeah, Hillary can't. Yeah, right, exactly. Hillary can't control Bill. How's she going to control a country? Now, she's having a rough time now. I mean, look at what's going on with her and the, what do you call it, with the, you know, with her latest faux pas. You know, her staff planning people out in the audience to ask her various questions. Of course, you know, she came right out, denied the whole thing, said that nobody on her staff is allowed to do that. It'll never happen again, blah, 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 blah. But come on, Hillary, how else are you going to be able to deal? How are you going to come off looking good if anyone starts hitting you with hard questions? You know, it's just not going to happen. She doesn't want those hard questions to be asked of her. Because if she has to answer them, she's dust, and she knows it. And that's why nobody has asked her yet, exactly how do you plan on pulling off the healthcare thing? What incentives are you going to offer to insurance companies to get them to cover everybody? How are you going to do that? I mean, if insurance companies could get a buck out of everybody and still provide the product that they wanted to provide, they'd already be doing it. I mean, let's face it, you know. Any corporation out there that's providing any product for anybody wants to get as many people to buy its product as it possibly can. So as a rule, they will make it as affordable as they can. And if there's somebody else out there providing the same product, well, they're trying to cut that guy's throat and get as close to it as they can and still make a profit. Well, insurance companies are no different. They're no different than anybody else. If they can get more people on board, the merrier it is for everybody. But there's reasons that they're not covering everybody. You know, there's reasons why for a lot of people it costs a lot more than it does for other people. Reasons why it costs so much from state to state, a la your state governments and the way they mandate how insurance is operated in their states. You know, I mean, the state of Massachusetts just lowered its expectations of all the companies out there in order to get them to try to come on board with their, everybody in Massachusetts is now required to purchase health care. You know, that's how we got universal health insurance here. Just make an edict. Everyone is required to do business with an insurance company for the purpose of health insurance. Now, if you can't afford to do business, we'll set up a way for you to do with it. But if you can afford, prepare for your payments to go up for the uninsured pool, so to speak. And that's exactly the way it's going to work. Terry, you got your hand up there, bud. Go right ahead.
Yes, sir. I'm Terry's stepson. My name's Jay Hanlon. I'm also from St. Louis. I'm a sergeant with the Army National Guard. My comments are related to people stating that the war in Iraq's over. It's not over. My unit is actually prepping for deployment next year to an undisclosed location in Iraq for military services. The actual fighting may have slowed, which it hasn't, But what we're trying to do now is actually put this place back together and get these people so that they can actually do jobs and be a society of their own. I want to thank everybody who's already stated, you know, remembering veterans. And just remember, we're all not older and wiser than all y'all, but we're trying to do our best.
Well, thank you for your service, my friend. Somebody that understands what's going on over there. You know, you are on a huge mission, my friend. You are not only representing the cause of the United States of America. You are not only representing the government of the United States of America. You're not only representing the people of the United States of America. My friend, you are representing an ideal. That ideal is called human liberty. It's called freedom. This country was founded because people who just got tired of living bound to other people. Remember our words in the Declaration of Independence. There comes a time for men to break the bonds that tie men together. Brought about independence, brought about freedom, brought about self-reliance, self-control, and self-determination. These all fall under the guise of a word called liberty. And that is the most important word that has ever hit mankind in the 10 million years of its existence. You, my friend, are representing that word, liberty, the people around the world. That is what you're fighting for. It's what you're putting your life on the line for. I, for one, just want you to understand that. The freedom is what this is all about. It's liberty. It's freedom. It's the fact that people need to have some opportunity for prosperity. Never forget that liberty has always bred prosperity. Prosperity in the end breeds peace. You're fighting for more than just an American ideal. You are fighting for a human longing that has existed for thousands and thousands of years. You know, there has always come along some portion of society that says society will not survive unless we bind people to each other, unless we force people to work together, unless people are forced to work for one another, to sacrifice for one another. Well, my friend, this country proved that all that was nonsense, that men can live free, that men can deal with each other fairly and honestly, something called trade. You, my friend, are standing up for that ideal. God bless you. Thank you for your service. Terry, you got your hand up again.
It's myself again, and thank you. It's gentlemen like yourself and others like you speaking your minds and living this free life, that's exactly why I do this. You know, if not for me and people like myself, we'd be in Canada, or we'd be in another Russia. So, as much as you all say thank you to me, I thank all of you. Keep your voices strong. Keep saying what needs to be said. Because if not for us opening our mouths and saying what needs to be said and opening the eyes of those who need the eyes opened, who knows where this nation would fall?
Good job, man.
Thank you.
All right, you're most welcome. My buddy Fly Fisher, how you doing tonight? You got your hand up. Mike's all yours.
Yeah, thanks, baby. I just wanted to pass on to Terry, his friend, that I had an experience last night. Oh, by the way, I'm calling from Walterville, Oregon. And my name is Barry. And went to the University of Oregon basketball game last night. And prior to the basketball game, just before the national anthem was played, the speaker for the stadium came on and asked that every current member of the U.S. military or a veteran stand, and then asked the crowd there that was just shy of 10,000 people to show their appreciation. And as a Vietnam vet, I stood. It was very strange because our welcoming home was less than appreciated. And as I looked around and watched people applauding those of us that were standing, I found it very emotional. But I also found it so encouraging because as I looked around, I saw the enthusiasm and the true appreciation for those people that were showing their appreciation. And you have to understand, this is in Eugene, Oregon, which is not exactly a bastion of conservatism. But it was a great experience. It's something that I'd love to pass on to Terry's young friend, that there is support out there for our troops, regardless of what you hear otherwise. And I just wanted to share that experience. Thanks, baby.
Well, thank you. Kind of made you feel real good. Got you feeling all warm and fuzzy there, didn't it? But that's what it's all about. You know, it really is. You know, everybody that has ever donned the uniform for this country, at one point in time, you know, and for me, I'll tell you what, it was the day we graduated out of boot camp. You're standing up there, and you're in uniform, along with thousands of other guys, and you do your march past the commander, and you turn and salute. You're walking on air, because you know you are doing something that very few other people will do. But you do it out of a love that's so deep in your heart for your country that it just, it can't be measured. It can't be measured with words. It can't be measured with dollars. It can't be measured with anything. But it's there. You know, it and it will always be there in a certain portion of this country that will be willing to put your lives on the line for it. You know, it's a beautiful thing. It really is. You know, the vets in this country, I have so much respect for them. It's just, you know, it's overwhelming. Actually, I mean, that's half the reason that I joined the service myself years ago. How could I be an old man sitting around with vets and say, oh, I didn't do that? I just couldn't bring myself to do that, you know, to not put in my time for this country. You know, to just sit back and let somebody else do something that I was perfectly capable of doing. That I just could not handle. You know, it was just the wrong way of going. You know, I had the ability, I got my health, I got 2 hands, 2 feet, and a head that knows how to move them around. And damn it, you know, if you want to maintain this country being as free as it is, and as much fun as it is to live here, well, you know, once in a while that's going to get tested, and there's got to be people ready to meet that test, and to defeat that test. And that was us. You know, thank God we did it. All right, back on. Moving forward over to more good news out of the Middle East. Read that as bad news for Democrats. But General Petraeus meets with al-Sadr's deputies. Top U.S. commander in Iraq, General David Petraeus, has met with representatives of Muqtada al-Sadr, once one of the top enemies fueling the insurgency against the elected Iraqi government, Fox News has confirmed. The general has not met personally with al-Sadr, the military said, but the meetings come as the Pentagon is softening its approach to the firebrand Shiite leader, who recently eased his hardline stance with a ceasefire called last August. Al-Sadr's aides have been quietly working with U.S. military officials to discuss security operations. General Petraeus has not had any direct engagements or meetings with Muqtada al-Sadr. The commander has indeed had directed engagements with some of the people that are within the organization. Mainly, that has been via the Force Strategic Engagement Cell, or FSEC, as part of its overarching efforts to assist with reconciliation efforts, Petraeus spokesman Colonel Steve Boylan said in a statement provided to Fox News. First reported over the weekend in Newsweek, U.S. commanders said the pullback of al-Sadr's Mahdi army has been a major factor in the decrease in Baghdad violence. They also said U.S. forces and Sadr's forces now have a common enemy. So-called special groups that were once aligned with al-Sadr, but have splintered from the main organization. Those groups, Newsweek said, are allegedly funded through Iran, and al-Sadr has formed a new unit to go after the special groups, which are ignoring the ceasefire. We do applaud and welcoming the efforts of Muqtada al-Sadr and his previous announcement of a ceasefire and what he is doing to try to bring those elements under control. We believe that what has happened with respect to decrease in violence can be attributed in part to those efforts. Those elements, such as the special group, extremist elements, have in fact dishonored Sadr's pledge of honor to bring about the ceasefire and become part of the process to move forward, Boylan said. Al-Sadr has taken himself out of the public eye since calling the ceasefire, and his whereabouts are unknown. Newsweek reported that he could be studying to fulfill aspirations of a high religious office. Well, whatever. It might be a good thing, might be a bad thing, what he's doing with a religious office. You know, the man is a confirmed, what's the word I'm looking for here? I don't want to say Islamo-fascist, but he's definitely high on the list of those that want to implement Sharia law there, or at least some version of Islam being the major ruling part of it. But, you know, there's the other guy in the south there, al-Sistani, the Shiite leader, who is, who's been on board with us right along here, and something tells me he's got something to play with this also. But the fact of the matter is, al-Sadr has been invited to come and join the government, you know, to actually be a representative in the representative government. And I think at some point in time here, it's going to have to dawn on him that he does have certain things that he would like to see happen in his country. You know, that he does have certain parts of his agenda that would obviously be better served if he was working from the inside with words instead of working from the outside with bullets. You know, the man is using his head, in other words. Who knows where he's going to go to from here? But one fact remains, the violence is slowing down, and they are sitting down and talking. And that is a victory that just cannot be measured in any other way. It's just a beautiful thing, and this is what we want. I mean, look at how we settle things in this country. Sure, we get heated, we start calling each other's names, but have you seen any states go to war with each other in the last 100 years? No. You know, well, yeah, it happened more than 100 years, 150 years. You know, stop and think about it. It's a beautiful way to go, man. If we can get them sitting down talking to each other, they will work it out. I feel confident about it. All right. Very, very good. Anybody else want to comment on this here before we move along? Do I see any hands up out there? Yes, I am slowly losing my voice here tonight. Running around out in the cold playing golf yesterday probably didn't help a bit, but hey, I don't feel sick. I'm just losing my voice. Ain't no big deal. All right. Moving right along here. Here's a good one. Actually, now I'm going to keep us right in the Middle East here a little bit. There is some other trouble brewing over there, and Bush is on top of this. This off the AFP News Network, one we rarely hear from, but has always got good stuff. The U.S. President George W. Bush today telephoned Lebanese Prime Minister Fouad Siniora to give him backing for presidential elections free of Syrian interference, the White House said. Bush briefed the Western-backed Siniora about his meetings this week with German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President Nicolas Sarkozy. White House spokesman Dana Perino told reporters aboard Air Force One. He reiterated his commitment to ensuring March 14 is the democratically elected government, and that they should be able to elect a government free of any external interference, especially from Syria, she said. March 14 is the pro-government movement of Lebanese parliamentary leader Sari Hariri, the son of Siniora's assassinated predecessor, Rafik Hariri. Siniora, Hariri, and other leaders accused Lebanon's pro-Syrian opposition of stalling a vote in parliament to elect a successor to President Emil Lahoud, who is also sympathetic to Damascus and who stands down on November the 24th. Opposition leader and parliament speaker Nabih Berri on Saturday postponed until November 21 for a third time the special session to elect a new president. In his call to Siniora, Bush reconfirmed our position that elections must happen on time and according to Lebanon's constitution, according to Perino. And he said that he looked forward to working closely with a president that is upholding Lebanon's international obligations, she said as Bush flew back from his Texas ranch to Washington. Lebanon's Western-backed ruling coalition on Monday accused the pro-Syrian opposition party Hezbollah of obstructing initiatives to resolve the crisis over the looming presidential election. Ruling coalition members condemned a speech on Sunday by Hezbollah chief Hassan Nasrallah, who called on President Lahoud to adopt a salvation measure before the end of his term in just under 2 weeks. Lahoud has warned that if no consensus candidate is found for the top job, he may name a parallel government. A reminder of the last years of Lebanon's 75-90 civil war when the two competing administrators battled for control. So this is something we got to look forward to here over the next few weeks. I will be keeping my eye on this and getting back to you over it. It's still a bit of a hotbed over there. And you remember everything that went on over there previously? You know, they basically pushed Syria out of there. we warned Syria that we would get involved with it if it need be, and they backed right out pretty nicely. So that's a good thing. All right, no comments on that. That's just fine. We can move right along here. And this news here, and this had to make me laugh. I figure I'll give everybody a good chuckle out there tonight. Al Gore joins famed Silicon Valley venture capital firm. In a career marked by second acts, Al Gore, the former Vice President of the United States and co-winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, is becoming a partner at Silicon Valley's most storied venture capital firm. Kleiner, Perkins, Caulfield, and Byers said on Monday that Gore, a campaigner for action to slow global climate change, will join the Menlo Park, California-based venture capital firm as a partner focused on alternative energy investments. The venture firm, which since 1972 has backed seminal computer startups ranging from Sun Microsystems to Compaq Computer to Amazon.com to Google Incorporated, has emerged in recent years as a leading funder of alternative energy companies. Gore, 59, is joining the Kleiner board as part of a collaboration between his Generation Investment Management Fund and Kleiner Perkins to fund so-called green business, technologies, and policies that address global climate change. Other active or affiliated partners at Kleiner Perkins include legendary computer backer John Doerr, alternative energy financier Vinod Khosia, and former U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell. Kleiner Perkins plans to locate their European operations at Generation's offices in London. In addition, Doerr, Silicon Valley's best-known venture capitalist and long a major backer of Gore's political and policy efforts, will join Generation's advisory board, the two organizations said. Kleiner has historically focused on making investments in and around Silicon Valley. However, it recently expanded operations in China, and as it moves into energy investments, has taken on a more global profile in its operations. Generation and Kleiner will remain focused on separate activities, with Kleiner Perkins investing in startups and Generation continuing its previous focus on investing in publicly traded companies focused on alternative energy or agriculture. Gore said that as part of the agreement between the two firms, 100% of his salary as a partner at Kleiner Perkins will be donated directly to the Alliance for Climate Protection, the nonpartisan foundation he chairs. As a member of the U.S. Congress for 25 years, Gore popularized the term information superhighway and was instrumental in providing funds for what later became the Internet. In 1990, his critics pilloried him for implying that he deserved credit as the father of the Internet. Since leaving government, Gore has played an active role in advising top Silicon Valley companies. He sits on the board of computer and phone maker Apple Incorporated and is a senior advisor to Internet services leader Google Incorporated. Now, this is a good one. I figured this would all give you a good chuckle, but the main reason I brought this up is because would like everybody to stop and think for a minute about this big, huge call that's going on about global warming and blah, 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 and what's going to happen with how they're going to shut it down with the Kyoto Treaty that was basically trying to wipe out our industry, and so that all of you liberals out there can understand that capitalism is going to defeat global warming. How's that, you say? Isn't capitalism what's causing global warming? And I say no. Capitalism may have, helped global warming come about. It may be producing more carbon emissions than ever before. But fact of the matter is, holding it all up isn't going to do a thing. Stopping the economy is not going to stop global warming. And what is going to help out here, and what is going to be the end result of this, is something that you liberals that are sitting in colleges out there listening to me, best take note of this. People like Al Gore are going to make a lot of money on some of the solutions to global warming. Now, whether they prove to be solutions or not doesn't make a bit of difference. The part of the thing that I'm trying to get at right now is that global warming can be looked at as something to scare you out of your shorts, or it should be doing something like showing you that, man, there's a lot of money in it. there's tons of money in it. And you think you're the only one looking that way? Get down to Chevron's website and take a look at what they're doing out there. People cry about your $3 a gallon gasoline prices, but did you know that Chevron has got some of the greatest things going out there? And this is just one outfit, just one oil outfit. And don't forget, the oil companies here, folks, are the ones that stand the most to lose the most, not only from global warming, but from the fact that we need alternative energy sources. Okay, the oil companies, whose main revenues have been nothing but oil since their inception, are looking at the fact that at some point in time, we're going to run out of oil. And if we ain't positioned to pick up the slack somewhere else, we're going to be out of business. So, as a point of fact here, and I got this thing printed out really small, but some of the strategic investments at Chevron include developing research alliances with several prominent institutions, establishing biofuel business unit to advance technology related to pursue commercial opportunities for ethanol and biodiesel. They are also out there exploring the potential of hydrogen. You know, in Michigan, they're working with the U.S. Department of Defense and Energy to implement a project that will provide participants with a better understanding of the potentials of alternative energy technologies and military applications. The Chevron Hydrogen Station will power a fleet of 5 Hyundai Tucson fuel cell vehicles that will be used by the U.S. Army and National Guard for mission-related purposes. In Florida, they collaborated with government officials, Ford Motor Company, and Progress Energy to design and build the state's first advanced hydrogen energy station. The station, which became operational in early 2007, fuels a fleet of hydrogen-powered shuttle buses used at the Orlando International Airport in the Orange County Convention Center. Near Los Angeles, they're working with Southern California Edison, using electrolytes to produce hydrogen from water to power a fleet of fuel cell vehicles. In Northern California, they're working with one of the state's largest public transit operators, Alameda Contra Costa Transit Authority, on a project that produces hydrogen fuel on-site for a fleet of fuel cell buses and other hydrogen-powered vehicles. And this is going on and on. They're leading in geothermal energy. In Indonesia, they have power plants that operate and produce enough electricity to meet the needs of millions of people. Our plants in the Philippines supply 15% of the electricity to Luzon. And, I mean, it's all over the place. And here you have it, folks. You know, the call is going on out there. BP doing much the same thing. BP is looking into all sorts of new crops out there for biofuels. Folks, look, you can sit there, you can get scared about global warming, you can get scared about the oil crunch, you can look at all this. I'm going to tell you something, folks. There's a ton of money in whatever is waiting to replace it. The guy that's going to make the money is the guy with the ideas. Now, what do you have ideas of doing? Do you have ideas of meeting this shortfall in energy? Of hitting it head on and trying to make a buck out of the deal? Or is your idea of curing all this to stand on a corner with a sign in your hand, getting rained on and not paid attention to? And it's up to you, folks. All right, Bill, you got your hand up there. You've been holding for a little while. Sorry it took so long, but I had to get it out. The mic is all yours.
That's all right, Mark. Go ahead. Act like you run the show. He brought it up. The religion of global warming. Unbelievable. As you said, you can follow the money. Follow the money. There's a noted person... What was his name? John Coleman, who founded the Weather Channel. This is a man who has nothing to lose, nothing to gain. He's retired. Did some extensive research on it. Has proven that global warming is a farce. But if you happen to be in school, go through 4 or 8 years of college to learn how to be a meteorologist or a climatologist, and you do a study that says that global warming is a farce, do you think you're going to get funded? No. I don't know if anybody noticed, but on the History Channel, they pretty much ran global warming as being the biggest killer, the biggest threat to the whole world. And global warming is going to take us out. It's going to be the end of the world. Did a little research. The History Channel, when it boils down to, is owned by a conglomerate run by GE. Follow the money on GE and global warming. Who stands the most to benefit from the Kyoto Treaty? Who's going to make the most money? Any ideas? GE. But if you say anything against it, you get nobody. You know, it's not big stuff. It's not headline stuff, so you're not going to get any funding. So you're broke. So you spent 8 years of your life going to school for what? You can't make money. Follow the money. Thanks again, Mark. Great show.
Hey, my pleasure. Hey, listen, before you take off here, I'd like to give you a little bit of time here to promote your show. I hear you're starting up a show a week from Wednesday. Tell me a little more. Tell us all a little more. Definitely want to be there for it.
Okay, BB. It's myself and my co-host, Sammy. Sam Daly. I call him Sam. He's like a brother to me. And it's called America Today Live. And what we do is we address the social issues of today, whether that be abortion, global warming. We cover the whole gamut. The way we run the show is basically our listeners write in and tell us what they want to hear about. Sammy and I and my crack staff dive into it, and we find everything we can on whatever subject it is, and we bring you the facts. We present the facts in a little bit different form, a little bit offbeat. We try to have a little bit of fun. But number one is audience participation. We try and get as many people as we can to call in or talk in the Pal Talk chat room to tell us what they're thinking and get more ideas out there about basically the evil that is socialism. Everybody considers social issues as something that American government needs to take care of, but I see it as social issues as something that we as Americans need to take care of, whatever the answer may be. But we bring it to you in a little bit different format. I think you'll enjoy the show. I hope I'll see you there. I hope I see a lot of people there. We did this show for about 5 years, and been on hiatus for about a year and a half, but we're looking forward to bringing it back. It'll be fun, it'll be exciting, and hope to be a kind of different twist to the other radio shows that you hear on the radio or on Pal Talk or wherever it may be. So look forward to seeing it, and thanks for bringing it up. I appreciate it, Mark.
Yeah, my pleasure. Terry, my buddy, you've been sitting there waiting a long time. Hand is up, the mic is all yours.
You know, global warming is probably the best subject that I think that one could bring up in a particular show. No scientific evidence whatsoever on global warming. Planet's been here 5 years, 5 billion years. 5 billion years, been through 3 global coolings and 2 global warmings. To the best of my recollection, it was a global cooling that killed the dinosaurs. We lose 3,000 insects a year. Yeah, I mean, it's not that big a deal. And if you think that you have the influence on what insects live or what insects don't, you're so wrong. You know, I think the worst thing that can happen, you know, in this world, you know, is to stop CO2 emissions. You know, and the reason I say this is because CO2 emissions are what plants grow on. You know, and what do plants put off? Well, it's not rocket science, baby. They produce oxygen. They produce what we need. You know, without CO2, plants could not exist. You know, couldn't exist, you know, and so, you know, it benefits us to really, you know, they've gotten so far now to the point that they don't even want you to burn wood to stay warm, you know, and in a lot of states I've noticed that they outlawed wood burning, you know. 98, but by the same token, 95 to 98% of Chinese manufacturing depends upon coal. You know, we have such an abundance of coal. We have such an abundance in this nation, this great nation. We can look at Anwar. We have the biggest, the largest reserves, fuel reserves on the face of this planet, you know. But yet we've somehow given this control over to people that are wackos, you know. The EPA, I'm speaking of, Environmental Protection Agency, you know. And let me say one more thing. Environmental Protection Agency are not scientists, by the way. I posted a link for science, you know. These people are not scientists. These people are for their own gain. And just like Mark said, you know, they're where you want to put your money, you know. So if you want to make money, I guess, put your money in. If you got money to spend, I guess, put your money into the eco-nuts. It looks like they've sold out America. They've sold this nation out. And they've sold, and they've sold the world out. And that's all I got.
All right. Thanks, Terry. My buddy, MD Guy, you're up next. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Mark. This is Mitchell from Western Maryland. There was, or is, a company called Clipper Wind Force that has been trying for almost 4 years to build a series of windmills along Backbone Mountain here in Western Maryland. These are some huge windmills, but it amazes me. You would think that the environmentalist would love this project. It has no carbon footprint. It releases no greenhouse gases. But they have fought this company for years because of all things. The Allegheny wood rats habitat may be degraded. And they have found that there may be migrating birds that would be killed. Now, you know, we try to come up with alternatives. But frankly, I don't care about the Allegheny wood rat. The other thing that we've tried to do here in Western Maryland, this town that I live in, has withdrawal rights from the Savage River Reservoir of up to 3 million gallons per day. Our proposal was to develop a small hydroelectric plant. But, oh my, you know, you would have to get the Army Corps of Engineers. It wouldn't produce enough electricity to be put out onto the grid. But, you know, once again, Mark, you talk about alternatives, and there are some alternatives. You know, that water is going to run downhill, whether we use the energy there or not. The wind is going to blow across those mountains, whether they put those windmills up or not. I like clean water. I am somewhat of an environmentalist myself, but if it comes to whether I heat my house where the Allegheny wood rat lives, sorry about your luck, Allegheny wood rat. I appreciate the time on mic. Thank you.
My pleasure. It's, you know, they're crazy. They're doing the same thing up here. Up here, they're even more blatant about what's going on. They don't want to ruin the skyline. Fact of the matter is, though, they lost. It was, even here in dedicated liberalism land, one of the outfits up by Brody Mountain Ski Area has managed to put up a few wind turbines up there. And they're actually pumping it out. Matter of fact, there was an article in the paper the other day where they had pulled one of them down because it's got a bearing problem. And the only way they could do it was to take it all apart, and fix the bearing, and put it all back together again, which they're assuming is going to cost several hundred thousand dollars just to pull this off. But hey, it's the way it is, you know. But you're right. There are tons of alternatives out there. You know, it's one of the things that we have here. Matter of fact, right up, I got a little river from next two blocks away from where I live here. Excellent little trout stream. Any of you guys ever make your way up here, I will take you to do some trout fishing like you have never seen. You know, you can regularly pull, well, you pull rainbow trout out of there. They're anywhere from 25 to 30 inches long. And that's a big trout, my friend. There's nothing like fighting one of those on a fly line. But at any rate, this little stream has got a dam maybe 8 miles up the road here. And it's up in western Massachusetts, Terry. And it's called the Housatonic River. About maybe 8 miles up the river here. Years ago, somebody put up a dam and a power plant, and it's still in operation. And when they broke up the grid around here, well, that's, you're paying your bill to the national grid now, but you could direct who your supplier funds were going to. Of course, it didn't account the taxes or the grid fees or the transmission fees, but the generation fees, you could direct where they went. And that's exactly where I said it was, right up here, the Glendale Power Company. It was a good move because it's just a nice little hydroelectric plant. It sits there. They revamped some of the generators and the turbines in it a few years back. Do a good job. Doesn't hurt any fish or anything in the river. Just does a beautiful, beautiful job. I think they've got maybe not much of a drop, maybe 20, 25 feet, but it's enough to power, you know, to run these you know, the hydroelectric turbines. And produce electricity. So the way I see it, hey, if I send my money over to them, they'll have money to keep in operation and keep on moving. I think it's a beautiful thing. But then, now, of course, there are other areas around here where they just don't want to look at the wind farms. Now, I'll grant you, myself, I think wind farms around here are a waste. Yes, we have a lot of time when the wind is blowing here. But there's a lot more time when the wind just isn't. That thing is going to be sitting there doing nothing. And, you know, it's a lot of people around here have ornamental windmills. And you can see, 9 times out of 10, you look at it, it's just sitting there. You know, we live down in a valley, you know, up on the hills. Once in a while, you get a little bit blowing. But nothing like what you could be gathering out off of the coast, where the wind is constantly blowing, where you get the trade winds blowing. But, of course, out there on the coast, in your most spectacular and your nicest spots, and the most easily accessible, readily geographical spot, Ted Kennedy's backyard, and he don't want to see them, so they haven't had them out there. But they've had it. They've been threatening to build a wind farm off the coast for years and years, and that's going to be the place it'll end up with. You know, there were other ideas years ago. People had pulling energy right from the tide. You know, the tide comes in, the tide goes back out. There's no reason you can't put hydroelectric turbines down in the tidal flow. You know, while it's flowing in, it turns the turbine, makes electricity. While it flows back out, turns the turbine, makes electricity. Beautiful thing. Worked fine. But, nobody else has come along with that idea yet either. They still haven't found any reasonable expectations of damage to the environment. But, of course, it has to be studied, you know, which they're going to keep on doing. If there's a hint of something somewhere, we got to go study that hint. And on top of that, you've got so many NIMBY groups. You know, the Not In My Backyard crowd, the Conservation Commission, you know, the Friends of Your Local River, the Friends of Your Local Mountains, the Friends of Your Local Sky, the Friends of the Local Lake, all of it. These little groups everywhere. And I'll tell you what, these little groups, they don't have the power to get a damn thing done, but they can stop anything. And that's all they have to do, you know. They look at it because, you know, their biggest thing is, well, we don't want the big multinational corporations in our neighborhood. You know, look what Verizon did when they came through here. What are you talking about? They made your phone service work, you know? And what good was it? You know, they all complained about Verizon, blah, 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 blah. Well, half the people around here have already bumped Verizon and gone with Time Warner. You know, I personally, myself, I don't have a phone line coming in and out of my house anymore. My telephone works right over the same cable that comes in my TV and same cable fueling my internet right here. Works fine for me. And I like the fact that I get a lower bill out of all of it. you know, it's crazy, but somebody's going to come along. Different things work out, and, you know, people are just going to have to understand, yeah, you're going to have to see it. That's all there is to it. It's there. Well, at any rate, I am looking over towards the door of the cafe here, and I can see the maitre d', and he is itching to do something here tonight because he is glaring at me with his keys in his hand, jiggling them back and forth, tapping his foot. Well, we got to get it moving. He has already hustled the waitresses here, and they've got the tables all piled high with the chairs. In other words, heading for the light switch, and I'm sure the lights are going to be dim here in a moment. But as always, folks, the bar will remain open. And there'll be plenty of good conversation going on here. Politics Lobby 4, Secure Our Borders, Voice Room, and Pal Talk. And I want to say thanks to everybody. You're all here. Next round of drinks is on me. But, folks, it's time to close the show. So we're going to say goodnight from the Politics Cafe at www.herncoat.com and the ASI Radio Network. See you all next week, folks. Hopefully, we're going to have a big surprise. Well, it won't be that big a surprise for room regulars here. I will be keeping you up on the room. Hopefully, tomorrow I have an appointment with Mr. Gary Becks on the phone. He's one of Duncan Hunter's spokesmen, and hopefully we are going to line up an interview with Duncan next week. So, folks, see you all later. Good night, folks. See you next week.